Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah! Welcome to another installment of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston, and coming up here in a few moments, I can't wait to talk with a strong, sensible Democrat who's trying to end MAGA Republican Congresswoman Lisa McClain's run in Congress. Clint St. Mosley is the Democratic candidate for the 9th Congressional District, a district McClain has been representing for the last few years. And, you know, representing is a charitable word to use, considering she really hasn't done a whole lot there to help the people in that district, which is pretty much the entire Thumb region. Clint St. Mosley is a small business owner who believes in helping the working people in his district while fighting for affordable health care, to protect reproductive and abortion care rights, and to protect democracy. He's my guest here in just a few moments. We also learned that Kamala Harris and Tim Walz will be giving their first joint interview since becoming the Democratic nominees for president and vice president, respectively. They'll be interviewed by CNN's Dana Bash, which is, I think they should have done their first interview with someone other than corporate legacy media, which is failing, absolutely failing democracy in how it's covering this election. And speaking of media failing us, I'll be talking about that in more detail later on in the Last Call segment. Dear Leader Trump's boy wonder incel and tech bro J.V. Vance visited Michigan a few times here lately, and I'd like to do a little media criticism class for everyone on how some local Michigan media figures failed in their coverage of Vance's visit from a few weeks ago in West Michigan. So that's coming up in the Last Call. Hey, I'd like to thank those of you who have subscribed to the podcast, and thank you again for subscribing to Left of Lansing on YouTube. Subscriptions are important to we podcast. So we appreciate it. If you're listening to this podcast for the first time and like the content that I'm providing, please subscribe and share it with others, be it with like-minded people, independents, or even moderate rational Republicans who are becoming a dying breed. Sharing us via word of mouth or social media, hey, that's the best way to help get this little venture out to as many people as possible. And speaking of social media, you can follow me on Twitter. I don't call it X. I call it Twitter. You can follow me on Facebook or the Gram. Just type in Left of Lansing and you'll find me. For instance, on Twitter, I responded to Michigan Senate Republicans who shared a Detroit news story showing that third grade reading levels in the state are now at a 10-year low. Now, of course, that is disturbing. And of course, the pandemic had a little something to do with that. But the Michigan Senate Republican Caucus sent out a tweet with that story saying, Governor Whitmer and the Democrats decided to pass an education budget that didn't add per pupil funding, and that's failing our kids. To which I responded on Twitter with the following. You mean to tell me after 40 years of Republican rule, after throwing cash upon cash at failed and unaccountable charter schools, Democrats are suddenly to blame after being in power for just 1 year? This coming from the party that reads It's American History from Rush Limbaugh pop-up books. And that's true. Rush Limbaugh did do a cartoon children's book that many, many adult MAGA people read. Now, the truth is Whitmer and Democrats have spent money toward early literacy instruction, literacy coaches, extra training for teachers, and added instructional time for early literacy. The Detroit News also reports that a majority of that aid came in money allocated in 2023 and this year, with nearly $330 million allocated in 2023, including a $94 million Detroit settlement and the $153.5 million in 2024. That, again, is according to the Detroit News. So Democrats and Governor Whitmer are investing in improving those scores. Oh, and reading proficiency improved for eighth graders, which, you know, Republicans wanted to ignore. That's not forgiving the third grade news, of course, but the eighth grade improvements cannot be ignored as well. Same with what State Superintendent Michael Rice said in the statement, according to the Detroit News in that story. And he says that poverty has consistently had a substantial adverse effect on student academic performance, which I suppose means Michigan Republicans are eagerly supporting free meals at public schools, a higher minimum wage, and earned paid sick leave, not to mention pushing for an expansion of the child tax credit on the federal level. I mean, we know that poverty hurts academic outcomes. I mean, so come on, Republicans, show us how pro-life you really are. Again, they are asking Democrats to fix their messes, and then they feel like they can criticize Democrats when they don't fix Republican messes fast enough. Isn't that just a beautiful cycle that just keeps going round and round? Quickly, I would just like to switch over to national politics or presidential politics. Kamala Harris says that she would like to do something about greedflation that we are seeing at grocery stores. Now, the best part about her rather broad proposal is how she was able to get MAGA Republicans to argue in favor of price gouging corporations. No, seriously, they did. They backed price gouging. Now, there's been some debate whether or not that's really happening at stores. Bloomberg reports this week that, and I quote, Kroger Company hiked prices on milk and eggs more than needed to account for inflation, the company's top pricing executive testified during a court hearing on the U.S. government's bid to block the grocery chain's purchase of rival Albertsons. In a March email to his bosses, Andy Groff, Kroger's senior director for pricing, acknowledged that the company had raised its prices more than required to adjust for higher costs. Wow, so greedflation is really a thing, as you were always hearing right here on Left of Lansing. And you know what I think? I think we should give corporations more tax breaks. Really, I do. And hey, while we're at it, why don't we let more monopolies take over so that way we can have less competition? Isn't that just awesome for our prices as well? I mean, isn't this working well for everyone? This system rocks. And you really think Donald Trump has a plan? You really think Donald Trump is going to do anything about higher prices? He cares about management. He cares about corporations, which is why he is fighting for more corporate tax breaks. That's all he cares about. He just cares about his class, the donor class. You know what else isn't working well for everyone? It's in the 9th Congressional District, and it's having Lisa McClain as its congresswoman. While not wasting time showing Hunter Biden's junk in wasteful congressional meetings, she's, well, not really doing much of anything. And by the way, can we just all admit right now, and I'm talking to some of you MAGA listeners because I know I've got some, can we just all admit that the years of investigating by the MAGA Republican House majority into Hunter Biden's personal computer turned out to be the biggest waste of time in American history, especially after Joe Biden dropped out of the race? What a waste of time. And that's what Lisa McClain spent most of her time doing for the most part, which is wasting time, wasting taxpayer time, wasting her constituents' time. She's been way too busy being a stooge for her dear leader, Donald Trump, that she failed to do the work of the people. She feels like she just represents MAGA and represents Trump. No, she has to represent everyone. She voted against the infrastructure and Inflation Reduction Act bills, bills that helped her district. She voted to nullify the 2020 election. That was one of her first votes getting in the Congress, which means not only was she trying to steal the election for dear leader Trump, but she was also saying that her own election wasn't on the up and up. Is that what you're trying to say, Lisa? McClain also never stood arm in arm with UAW workers during their strike against the big three automakers last year, proving once again that she doesn't stand with Michigan workers. And of course, she's all for having the government take away the health and economic freedoms of women in Michigan and throughout the country by allowing government to tell women what they can and cannot do with their bodies. Well, the people of the 9th District do have a choice. A choice for the better, a choice to end Lisa McClain's anti-freedom, anti-democracy, anti-worker, and anti-woman agenda. They can pick Clint St. Mosley, who's running to bring some responsible and respectable governing to the 9th District, something that people are just craving for. He's joining me here in just a few moments, right after these words from Jessica. You're listening to LOL.
the Left of Lansing podcast. If you truly want to get Pat fired up, talk about Tigers baseball or how you think the 90s produced the worst music of any decade. You've been warned. Email him at leftoflansing@gmail.com and follow him on Twitter at leftoflansing. Here's Pat.
If you've listened to this podcast, you know that I haven't held back on my criticisms and at times disdain for MAGA Michigan Republican Congresswoman Lisa McClain from the 9th Congressional District. Now, this 9th District is, for the most part, located in the Thumb region of the state, which includes the entirety of Huron, Sanilac, and St. Clair counties, parts of northern Oakland County, Macomb, Tuscola, and Lapeer counties also make part of the 9th District. Now, listen, we won't sugarcoat it for you, and I don't do that here on this podcast. I always keep it real, but this is a pretty red district, and it preferred Dear Leader over President Biden by some 30%. I think in 2020. Lisa McClain is running once again for re-election. And honestly, I have to tell you, covering her on this podcast for the past few years, I'm not sure what she's done while in Washington other than trying to be Marjorie Taylor Greene's sidekick. I don't know how she is helping the people in her district. The Thumb region deserves better. The voters are looking for better people to represent them and their interests. And that's why Democrat Clint St. Mosley is running against Lisa McClain this year, not only to help flip a congressional district from red to blue, but to let people know there's someone willing to do the hard work to make life better for his neighbors and his entire area rather than just doing the weird grandstanding stuff for Dear Leader on a daily basis that Lisa McClain does. So I am happy to welcome Clint St. Mosley on Michigan's premier progressive podcast here this week. Clint, welcome.
Thanks, Pat.
Before we get into why you're challenging Lisa McClain, Clint, you're not a native Michigander, so how did you eventually make it up here to the Bitten State?
Well, it's because of a beautiful woman named Susan. She's from Lake Orion, born and raised. She went to nursing school at Oakland University. I'm originally from North Carolina by way of Tennessee, and my wife Susan wanted to get out of the cold, so she went to grad school at the University of Tennessee in Knoxville. We crossed paths, got married, built a house, and found out we were going to have twins. So we decided to move to Michigan to have the help of her family and some extended family. And I love it here. I love Michigan other than January and February. But I always tell the story, when you meet a Michigander, you know, as a Southerner, you know that you may end up in Michigan. So here we are, been here 8 years and love it.
Was it a bit of a culture shock, other than the weather, of course, being from the South and moving up here, or not so much?
You know, I tell a lot of people that I really think that North Carolina and Michigan are very similar. We've got beautiful weather most part of the time. We've got the big cities, the rural areas. You've got the metros and the farmland. So there's a lot of similarities between North Carolina and Michigan, obviously, other than the winters.
Very well. My wife lived in the Raleigh, North Carolina area back in the early 90s, you know, when Jesse Helms was one of the senators there. Oh, boy. And I think she's still taken aback just a little bit by how much that state has turned purple through time due to demographic shifts and things like that. Does that surprise you, or did that surprise you, how North Carolina has turned a bit more purple through time?
You know, it's funny, as I look back when I was younger, I'm 44, so I was in school in the 80s and 90s. It was a moderate state at that time. So if you go back and look at some of the governorships and such, we were a moderate state. And then the mayor from Charlotte, Pat, I forgot his last name, but he took over governorship and he really took it to the right. Dramatically to the right, along with a lot of other elected officials. And now I do think it's coming back to where it was, you know, due to some demographic changes, some people moving into the state. And really, I think just realizing we've run some good leaders in that state, Roy Cooper, and we've got some really competitive races this year and some good Congress people. And so I think it is coming back to where it has been. And then again, I know we'll talk about policy. As you look at the policies that affect North Carolinians and the Tar Heel State, you know, it makes sense that it's coming back towards blue, towards the left, because they make a lot of sense for the people in North Carolina, as do they for the people in Michigan.
Yeah, that's right. Was that Pat McCrory? Is that who you're trying
Pat
to think
McCrory,
of?
Yeah, I've tried to, you know, tried to forget his name. He did a lot of damage, you know, his leadership, and he's still a talking head promoting right wing kind of craziness. So yeah, I've tried to forget him, but I do see him on Meet the Press all the time.
Well, I did forget him until you just mentioned him. So that's my fault. That's my fault. Hey, this is the question I ask anyone running for office here in Michigan. So I will ask you, what is it that you like the most about the area that you like to represent in the United States Congress?
The diversity. The ninth is made up of northern suburbs on the southern end. So you think about Lake Orion, where I live, Oxford, Clarkston, all the way over to Algonac, up to Port Huron. You just have a lot of diversity. So you have those suburbs. And then you quickly, as you get into Lapeer County and north, you get into the more rural area, the farmlands, just the generational farms that have been there. And then you have the coastline, you have the thumb, right? So you have Caseville and Port Austin, and you have this beautiful beaches and tourist areas, diversity that you have, and that you can cross from, go into the farmland and the thumb, and you see like the renewable energy, the windmills, the solar farms. You have the coastline that's just beautiful. So there's a lot of diversity in the area, and it shows we have a just tremendous amount of the populations at the southern end of the ninth, but so much diversity in the area.
Clinton, have you always been engaged in politics, or was it something that developed, you know, maybe through time, maybe through your travels up to Michigan, or once you lived here in the state? When did that all happen for you?
I started pretty young. I remember Bill Clinton running in 92, and this is back when I was in sixth grade, and they would show the films, right? You know, they'd kind of talk about the current events and topics, and so we'd have a few minutes a couple of times a week where they show a video. And I remember Bill Clinton running and kind of being interested in him, and then learning more about his policy and his campaigns. And then my first vote was in 1998. I believe I voted for John Edwards. He was running for Senate at the time. And I was always a supporter of his politics, maybe not his personal life, but I worked on several campaigns just as a volunteer, never full-time, never paid. Worked on the Gore campaign and then some others. And even as I moved around to different states, was always trying to be a volunteer and involved in the local parties, but never ran for an elected office, or never was a full-time, but always interested in what politics and public service could do for people.
Clint, I hope you don't mind me asking, but what do you do for a living?
Yep, so I own an insurance agency in Sterling Heights. I'm a small business owner.
Ah, all right. You're a small business owner. Well, Clint, later on here, I may have a couple of questions that will be pertinent to you since you are a small business owner, but that's coming up here in a second. First, what made you decide that now is a good time to run against Lisa McClain here this year?
Yeah. So like I said, I'm involved in local clubs and work with local officials who are running campaigns. And so I was having coffee with a candidate that was running in the 10th congressional district, Emily Bush. If you know her, her son was a survivor of the Oxford school shooting, and she decided to do something about it. And she ran for state house, and then she just ran for Congress. And we were talking and having a good conversation. And then by the end of it, I was just like, Emily, how can I help you? What can I do? And in typically Emily fashion, looking out for others, she said, Clint, you should run for something. You know, you should run against Lisa McClain. You should run in the ninth. And this was August of last year. And I said, you know what, Emily, I'm sure someone is going to run. Thank you for thinking of us. And I'm sure someone's going to run. And we started staying connected to the party. And we realized later into the fall that no one was planning on running. And we got to the first of the year, and no one was going to run. No one had filed. No one had gained their signatures. And no one had even told the party that they were going to run. So my wife and I had several discussions. And I have twin 7-year-old boys. And we even included them in some of the discussions. And as corny as it sounds, Pat, we said, that's not what democracy looks like. That's not what democracy looks like, to not even have someone running against Lisa McClain, someone not on the ballot. So we got on the ballot, we got our signatures, and we ran. And, you know, Lisa is my representative, and I get her Friday emails, constituent emails, and they're garbage. They're BS. They're, you know, just a lack of accountability, a lack of her trying to represent the ninth district. She's an extremist. She represents the MAGA Trump faction well. She'll do whatever they say. And we just said that that's not representative of the ninth, of our friends and family, even Republicans and independents. They deserve to be represented. And we jumped in. We got the help of the local parties and so many people in the ninth district. We got the signatures required. We took 1,800 to Lansing. And since March, we've been running. We're gaining momentum, building a great volunteer base. And we're ready to give Lisa a run for her money in November.
That's good. You know, I've interviewed other Democrats and progressives who decided to run for certain offices in rural areas across the state, whether it be the UP, the Northern LP, the west side of the state. It's the first time I'm actually talking more of the Thumb region here on this podcast. And they kind of echoed what you just said of why you decided to really get into this, because they just thought somebody had to represent the other side. You see, if voters out there don't know that there is a choice, and that they don't know there's somebody representing the other side, well, then they may just stay home or they may just feel defeated. And that's not good for anybody. Like you said, that's not good for democracy at all. I'm hearing a similar theme there from you. Is that right?
Democracy is not a spectator sport, right? Famous quote, Pat, but you have to get in sometimes and roll up your sleeves. And don't get me wrong, I'm very confident in my ability to lead. I'm very confident in my ability to be a representative. So this wasn't a show pony situation where we're just getting in. We were a little bit late and we would have preferred the cycle that someone else had already started a campaign earlier on because it is difficult and it is competitive. But don't get me wrong, we're in this to win it. But if we don't win, we do have some other goals that we're trying to build infrastructure for the future. And that's something that, you know, again, if anyone's listening out there from the Michigan Democratic Party or the National DCCC, we need support in these areas. Obviously, the competitive races like the 10th are important because we have to flip the House in Washington in this election cycle, hold the Senate, hold the White House. But we need to make sure there's support out here in these local areas. It doesn't have to be millions of dollars, but we have to do a better job in several of these. You know, Callie Barr up in the first and Jessica Schwartz and so many people, Libby's running. You know, there's so many good people and good candidates. Obviously, we don't expect the world, but we do have to put resources. Listeners, you know, we need resources in these districts so that we can have a competitive campaign. And again, the great thing about it, Pat, I'm talking, preaching to the choir. I know you know this, but you know, when we're out there in the ninth and we're energizing the base and the independents and even the lean Republicans to come vote for us, there's a good likelihood that they're going to vote for Slotkin and they're going to vote for Harris as well. So we get those reverse coattails that we get out and motivate the district. And we see those up and down the ballots. We see those Democrats elected.
You're absolutely right, by the way, of being in this race to win it. Not only is it key to have people running in such a district as yours to start building a foundation, you could say, for the future, but victories can happen, as you probably heard out in Ottawa County. You have that right-wing Ottawa Impact majority on the county commission. Well, one of their members got recalled. All because Democrats, progressives, independents, and even some sane Republicans got together and said, no, we don't want to go into that extreme direction. Same for Delta County up in the UP. Their county commission was also overtaken by a MAGA wing. But again, through organizing, through messaging, you had Democrats, progressives, you also had independents, and some sane Republicans say, no, we don't want to be taken into that extreme direction. And they successfully recalled those MAGA commissioners as well. So victories can be had. It just takes people like you, Clint, to get a movement started. You mentioned the Democratic Party. Have you really heard much from the National Democratic Party?
No, we haven't, but that's not stopping us. We're working with the local parties. We're working with anyone who will listen, clubs, et cetera. And they've been tremendous, you know, with their volunteerism. They're inviting us to events, setting up events for us, helping us promote the campaign, financial contributions. We've attempted some contact with the National DCCC and national leaders. I haven't gotten that yet, but again, we're not letting that stand in our way of getting our message to voters anywhere we can in the ninth.
Clint, do you believe personally that Lisa McClain cares about the future of our democracy?
I don't. And I believe that Lisa McClain cares about what Trump wants and what Trump says. She was just with him this week in Roseville and in Macomb County. That's part of it. We hear stories of how leaders and groups have gone to Washington to meet with her and they don't even get in her office. They're asked to stand in the hallway. So, you know, I think representative government means once you're elected, you represent the entire ninth. And obviously when I'm elected, I will be different. I welcome all into my conversations, into my office, even if we don't agree with one another. I still represent them. And again, this extreme partisan cycle, it's not what we see out there, Pat. So, you know, we do see it on social media and we do see it in the paid for media. But when you get out knocking on doors and, you know, I was up at the Huron County Fair a couple of weeks ago and we had NPR following us around, This American Life. And what they wanted to see is, how are you doing this, Clint? You know, if you're going to win, you've got to turn some red votes blue. How do you do this? And we were talking to some people and one conversation we had, Pat, was with two people who work at Harbor Beach Medical Center. And we were just talking about the climate in healthcare, right? What are they seeing? What do they need? If they had a magic wand, what would they ask for from Washington, D.C.? And at the end of it, I handed a card so they could connect with their campaign. And I don't lead with, I don't say I'm a Democrat or Republican or independent. I just say, hey, I'm running for Congress. What's on your mind? I try to listen. We had a good conversation and they told me some problems and I shared some of my solutions and they liked them and we agreed on them. I gave them a card and she said, well, I'm a Republican and I can see you are too because my card is red, white, and blue. And I said, actually, I'm not. And I saw this kind of shocked face and it wasn't a shock like, oh my God, you're a Democrat. It was a shocked face like, hey, we can work with you. We talked about an issue. We talked about a solution. I agree with you. right? And I asked for her vote, and we'll see, right? We'll see if how that transitions and translates. But that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to talk to people about what are their issues, what solutions can we offer, where can we compromise? And Lisa McLean is just not doing that. You mentioned it, but she's trying to be Michigan's Marjorie Taylor Greene. And if you watch her TikTok, she's doing a pretty good job of it.
Since you've been out there talking to many voters in your district, what issues have you been hearing constantly here during this time?
I would say the three that we hear most often are inflation, right, and economic issues, healthcare, and reproductive rights. Mm-hmm. And we've got a little bit different. So we kind of look at the ninth. If you look at the bottom third, that's probably where 70, 80% of the population is. They're northern suburbs and, you know, a little bit more diversity there, culture, educationally, things like that. As we move into the northern ends, it's really economic and kitchen table issues. We hear inflation and prices, but really when I start to talk to people, what that quickly becomes is the realization that wages are really the issue. Inflation is an issue. And I see that when I go to the grocery store or stop at the gas station, those are true. But if you dig into it, you see that despite productivity gains skyrocketing over the past 60 years, wages have been flat. And when adjusted for inflation, maybe even a little bit less than what they were 60 years ago. So your buying power is less than what it was 60 years ago. And so we talk to people about that and they realize that, yeah, you know, look, I've been getting these 2% increases, pay raises a year. I've worked for this company for 20 years, but, you know, inflation is at 3, 4%. So my buying power every year is shrinking. And so, you know, that's one of the issues that is at the forefront of our campaign, a living wage, right, that is tied to productivity, that is tied to inflation, making sure that we pass the PRO Act to make sure we can expand workers' rights to organize. You know, you look at what the UAW, what Sean Fain and the UAW have done over the past few years. And again, we're going to continue to build on that labor revolution. They have been laying the groundwork for that labor revolution for years. And workers and hardworking families have been seeing the benefits. And we'll continue to see the benefits as we expand opportunities to organize and we reduce distractions from people trying to, companies and government officials trying to, you know, illegally impact workers' rights to organize. So the kitchen table issues, the inflation and wage issues, you know, reproductive rights, we've passed that in Michigan. It's in our constitution, but that can quickly be wiped away. You know, you look at Project 2025, you look at Trump. I don't believe Trump for one second. I know that if he was given the opportunity and his right wing base and friends and family and legislators, if they pass a ban on abortion rights and even limited it into something like 6 weeks, I believe he would sign it. So even though in Michigan we have that in our constitution, that can be quickly taken away at a federal level. So those are things that are important. So, and then several other things, you know, you get up north, the farm bills, the environment, clean water, clean air, clean, you know, making sure we have soil conservation. So a lot of issues, you know, to answer your question, Pat, the kitchen table issues, the reproductive rights, and then healthcare.
So what you just described to me is something that I've been talking about here a bit, and that's populism. I feel like there's a populist wave happening across the entire country, not just here in Michigan, but across the entire country. You mentioned with the union movement here, the strong union movement. I believe that is part of the populist wave. Maybe I can get more of your take on that. Do you think that there is this move towards populism here that's happening? Let's just talk about in your district alone.
Tell me a little bit more. So when you say populist, what do you hear is being discussed?
Well, what I think I'm talking about is how some people just feel like they're being left behind economically, that they're just not able to get ahead. They're sick and tired of seeing government work for the donor class, but not really working for them, whether it be education-wise. There are so many people who are in college debt who said, you know what, I did exactly what I was supposed to do, but now I'm still in this debt and I just cannot seem to get ahead no matter what kind of job I'm getting. Or I went to a vocational school, I got some special training, and still that's not able to help me pay the bills in the end. There are many who say they are feeling squeezed by grocery prices, by healthcare prices, or by housing prices. You know, that kind of stuff that you're just hearing throughout the country, and I've been hearing it here on the show a lot. Many who are fighting for higher minimum wages, many who are fighting for paid sick leave, things like that. I feel like that there's this kind of populism that really wasn't around in the 1990s. Clint, you mentioned Bill Clinton, right? Well, there was no way Bill Clinton was ever going to talk the way that we're hearing many candidates today, including our presidential candidates, talk in such a populist manner. I feel like that is where the country is today. I don't know. I was just trying to get your take on that.
Oh, 100%. No, yeah. Thanks for giving me some insight into what you're seeing and hearing, because absolutely, I'm seeing and hearing the same things, right? So at the top, you've got trickle-down economics, which I've read about, learned about, but it's pretty much just saying that, hey, if we give millionaires and billionaires all the tax cuts and the money, it's going to trickle down to everyone else. But that's proven to be false. It's proven to be data-driven, not true. It doesn't work. On the reverse, if you do what the Biden-Harris administration has done, if you go back and look at from back to FDR, if you have an approach to bottom-up, middle-out economics, it works time and time again. Again, I'm a business owner. I am pro-capitalist. I think it's the best system out there. But we have to have a balance and safety nets and protections. Corporate America, big business, big banking, big ag, they have done a tremendous job marketing and fooling people. That's what they've done. They fooled people that if we raise the minimum wage, it's going to hurt businesses. It's going to cost us thousands of jobs. Not true. Proven in other states, other cities like Seattle, the West Coast. They've said, if you institute a family leave and a sick leave policy that helps new parents, it's going to decimate small business. Hey, Pat, it doesn't. I've been a business owner for 7 years. And from day one, I offered maternity, paternity leave, sick leave, vacation time. And my business is thriving. I have very low turnover as it compares to other businesses similar to mine. So it doesn't, right? Yes, we have to make sure we help small businesses and we make sure that they have guidance and direction and resources, but it doesn't decimate businesses. You know, same thing with healthcare. I was just having some talks with people about Obamacare. He said, you know, if you notice Obamacare is so popular, don't even call it Obamacare anymore, right? Healthcare is another one that they convince people that, you know, we need these big pharma and pharmacy benefit managers that really just rip off everyone. So there are a lot of discussions and talks about what we're going to do about it and how we're going to take back our balance, especially for working class and working families.
No, thanks for giving us that insight as a small business owner and how you feel about those issues, because all I've been hearing, especially after the Michigan State Supreme Court came down with its ruling saying that Republicans acted unconstitutionally here in the state when they tried to water down paid sick leave and minimum wage raises a couple of years ago. And all I've been hearing from the business community and the restaurant lobbyists is how this is going to kill small business throughout the state of Michigan. In fact, we won't even have small businesses anymore throughout the state of Michigan. But it doesn't sound like you adhere to such a viewpoint.
I don't. And let me be clear. I used to be in the restaurant business. I've talked to several restaurant owners. I've talked to several tipped servers, you know, that are on the current wage and are going to be moving to the future wage. Listen, there is a transition. And with any transition, there needs to be time and resources to make sure we help people adjust and adapt.
Yeah.
That is with any change, we have to do that. But the fear-mongering, look at the data, look at other cities, look at other states. We're not the first. Maybe in some aspects we are the most aggressive. And again, we'll look at that, and legislation should be ready to adapt to the needs of the communities, but it's not going to decimate. We're not going to have mass unemployment. You know, for anyone who's been to Europe, this is their model. Prices may be a little bit higher for a food and a beer, but you don't have a 20% tip. So at the end of the day, you know, again, maybe our tipping philosophy adjusts, you know, our prices may increase a little bit, but if it means that family can have a living wage, can support their family. And again, you know, look at mostly who our servers are. We have to protect them, make sure they have a living wage. And they're one of the most taken advantage of segments of our working population historically. So, you know, we have to fight for everyone. As we fight and as we give them a living wage, it boosts the economy. It's not hard. It's not difficult. When you put money in working class families' hands, they spend it, they grow the economy, they're able to pay for their necessities. It's not a difficult economic concept. It's definitely one that you would learn in basic economics class.
Well, then that leads then maybe to my next question here, Clint. Does Lisa McClain really care? And is she really hearing the concerns of the hardworking people of the 9th District?
You know, I've not seen Lisa at an event that is a tough crowd or a tough conversation. You know, I think if she really cared, she would be visiting some Democratic clubs. She would be visiting some other clubs versus the tours that she normally goes on. I don't know Lisa. I don't know her personally. I've never met her. I can only look at her statements, her policies, her social media, and her public appearances. I don't know Lisa. A lot of people have said she may not even be as extreme as she portrays, that probably she's more moderate. The people that know her, that spend some time with her, but she walks in a room and she puts on the MAGA hat and that's her persona, right? So I don't know which is worse, but what I can say, if you just look at her policies, you look at her votes, for example, you know, one of the things we love and admire about Michigan are Great Lakes, and she would not even vote to protect the Great Lakes from drilling. These are basic things that I think the majority and supermajority of Michiganders agree on. We've got to protect our water. We've got to protect our Great Lakes. And she wouldn't even vote for that. She wouldn't even vote to extend support for Ukraine as they're being invaded by Russia. She wouldn't vote for that. She didn't vote for the Infrastructure Act, but she shows up at the events and carries the big checks, right? Does she care about the ninth? She cares about parts of the ninth. She cares about probably a third of the people who are MAGA Trumpers, and she will continue to support them. The other 70%, I would say, look at her record, and the answer is no. And that's what we're fighting for. We're trying to connect with lean Republicans, Republicans who feel like they don't have a party any longer, feel like they don't have a home. We're trying to focus on independence. And obviously, our Democratic base, that's out there. You know, we're not as loud. We don't have to fly a flag. But they're out there. You go up to Huron County. I was at the, I was in parades. I was at the fair. A lot of them are quiet, Pat. They're like, hey, thanks for doing what you're doing, you yeah. know, but they'll stand up and clap at a parade. They'll show support. And when they get inside that voting box, as you've seen in national, you know, Gretchen Whitmer's numbers or Prop 2 and Prop 3, they outperform what we would see in the down ballot races. So we have people that agree with their policies. We have Democrats. We just have to turn them out and continue to grow and continue to have those hard conversations that let people know that our policies will help you. Turn off the social media and turn off the BS. Just listen to the policies, the policies, and hear what we are offering. And more often than not, people will agree with us and hopefully vote for us.
Real quick, just to go back to something you said, Lisa McClain voted against the infrastructure bill and the Inflation Reduction Act. But then when the money starts flowing to her district, she's out there celebrating it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny how, and this is, you know, again, representative of the Republican Party, they'll vote against everything, but they'll show up at the parade and the ribbon cutting.
Of course. Listen, I took too much of your time, but I thank you so much for being on. Clint St. Mosley, Democratic candidate in Michigan's 9th Congressional District. Clint, if people would like to learn more about your campaign and would like to volunteer and donate, how can they do so?
So it's Clint, the number 4congress.com. So C-L-I-N-T, the number 4congress.com.
I'll make sure to put a link to your campaign site on leftoflansing.com and wherever people are listening to this podcast. Clint, thank you so much for being on, and thanks so much for putting your hat in the ring and just joining in the fight. We greatly appreciate it, and good luck to you.
Thanks, Pat. Thanks for all you do.
He spent nearly 25 years working as a liberal voice in conservative talk radio across the state, and he's still a somewhat stable person. It's the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. You can find archives of the podcast, plus Pat's musings on other topics in written form at leftoflansing.com. Left of Lansing archives are available wherever you get your podcasts. And now Left of Lansing is available on YouTube. We'd like to thank Audioboom for distributing all our episodes so we can share progressive, otherwise known as common sense, values across Michigan and the country. Now, here's Pat Johnston.
Thanks to Clint St. Mosley for joining us here this week, and I will leave a link to his campaign site so you can donate and read up more about his views. You see, Clint's doing something that we've heard other dirt road Democrats across Michigan tell us here on the podcast this year, that just by showing up, putting your name out there, talking and communicating with voters, and just letting people know that they don't have to settle for despair and live with a lying, anti-democracy, warped and weird MAGA extremist like Lisa McClain. You see, the more people understand that there are other like-minded people around them where they live, and that we refuse to cede any ground to the weird, the more victories we can have across the state, and the more MAGA careers we can end like Lisa McClain's. Time now for a Left of Lansing last call. All right, I have to speak about this because it's been driving me up the wall. It's the corporate news media's constant whining about Kamala Harris and Tim Walz not doing any interviews with them. Oh, boo-hoo. Now, there's a couple of levels to this, which I will talk about here, so you have to stick with me. A couple of weeks ago, I was listening to Tim Skubick's Off the Record show, and I'll say I listen to it because Tim's able to get some guests on his show that are pretty good, and he and his fellow Lansing journalists do a decent job at asking some questions. But while it's not perfect, they talk Michigan politics, which, hey, I'm a sucker for, obviously. Anyway, I was listening to Tim, Rick Albin from Wood TV, Beth LeBlanc of the Detroit News, and Kyle Malin from the Lansing City Pulse. And they spent about 5 minutes lamenting, you know, why in the world the Harris campaign hasn't talked to them yet or talked to anyone in the media yet, even though at that time she'd only been the party's official nominee for a few weeks. However, before they really started complaining about Harris, they focused on J.V. Vance's visit to Byron Center recently. Now, again, this was a couple of weeks ago, and they had a little self-congratulatory moment for Wood TV's Rick Albin because Rick got to talk with J.V. Okay, look, as a former journalist myself, way back when, I understand why journalists get frustrated when politicians refuse to talk with them. I get it. So I decided to listen to Rick Albin's Wood TV wrap-up on Vance's visit to Byron Center, which I'm going to play some of the clips here for you right now. So here was the intro with Rick Albin from Wood TV.
The whole idea that J.D. Vance was here in Byron Center at a company just a couple of miles away really speaks to the idea that the Trump-Vance tickets understands that in suburban areas like this, where there have been traditionally reliable Republican voters, they didn't show up in 2020, and they somehow have to reach out to them and say, we want you back in this party.
Okay, I had to stop it there, because you noticed how Rick Albin sort of glossed over where J.V. Vance visited in Byron Center. He described it as a business. Well, thanks to Derek Dobies of the Michigan AFL-CIO, he tweeted a little bit about that Byron Center business. And here's what he tweeted. The business is named Cords Incorporated, a non-union trucking company. Mr. Dobie says that this visit served as a good opportunity to talk about Trump's Project 2025 and the threat to work health and safety by another Trump presidency. And he also tweeted this. He said, first, Cords Incorporated was fined $1,800 in May of 2024 by OSHA for a serious violation that was found to cause or likely to cause death or serious harm to their workers. And Mr. Dobie is from the Michigan AFL-CIO, found a selection in the Heritage Foundation's Project 2025, which those involved or writing it have worked or at least have some ties with Dear Leader Trump. And it says, and I'm quoting, Congress and the Department of Labor should exempt small businesses, first-time, non-willful violators from fines issued by OSHA. Huh, you don't say. So Cords is non-union, was fined by OSHA for causing some kind of harm to its workers, and just decided to allow its place to prop up tech bro J.V. Vance as part of the Trump campaign? Look, I'm sure that was just a coincidence. I mean, really, just happened. But it's a coincidence that perhaps Rick Albin could have, should have, maybe brought up in his story? Maybe? I mean, the context matters here, Rick, and maybe that's a question you could have asked J.V. Vance. Like, here you go. Senator Vance, you spoke here at Cords Incorporated, which not only is non-union, but was also fined by OSHA for causing harm to its workers earlier this year. Was that just a coincidence that you showed up here at this business, or does that signal the kinds of anti-worker policies a Trump-Vance ticket supports? Now you see right there, seems like a legitimately sound and Michigan-relevant question to me, considering how Michigan Democrats reversed the anti-worker Right to Work for Less law in 2023. Perhaps that could have been a follow-up question? Well, unfortunately, it wasn't. Instead, this is the question Rick Albin of Wood TV asked J.V. Vance. Listen.
Politicians have complained about each other and said ugly things about each other from the beginning of time. But sure, it's been raised to a new art form, it seems, yeah, right, as if. And a lot of people that I talk to, and including me, are just worn out from listening to it. What can you do as a new face on the campaign trail to try to make people want to vote again?
Oh, my. As long as I can remember, the political vitriol has always been around. I remember when George H. Bush ran those racist Willie Horton ads against Michael Dukakis in 1988, and when North Carolina Senator Jesse Helms ran that racist anti-affirmative action ad where you saw a white male's hands read a job notice that he was skipped for a person of color, or when George W. Bush ran a hate-filled campaign against gay marriage, or the anti-choice ads that we've been seeing for decades, or how John Kerry was called unpatriotic even though he actually fought in Vietnam, unlike George W. Bush, and on and on and on. And all of that through the years led to the Trump MAGA takeover of the Republican Party, which is in shambles here in Michigan. And by the way, I didn't even get started with talk radio and Rush Limbaugh, okay? After everything Donald Trump has said, after everything J.B. Vance has said against women, especially women without children, Rick Albin from Wood TV asks him how we can tone down the nasty rhetoric. And speaking of J.B. Vance's hatred of women without children, maybe another question could have been, hey, what do you think about Michigan enshrining abortion rights in its state's constitution? I'm just spitballing here. I mean, democracy is on the line, and Rick Albin wonders if we can debate with decorum? Sorry, guys. Sorry. Thanks to you guys in the press, those days are gone. We thought you guys would hold their feet to the fire, but no, you just let them skate by with questions like that. Oh, and here's part of JV's answer, by the way. Just listen.
You know, I think that what I can do is, one, obviously I'm bringing a fresh face to the race. A lot of people don't know who I am. I'm only 40 years old. And so I do think I bring a different generation's perspective to the problems of the day. But I think the reason that people are disenchanted with politics is that leaders don't talk enough about policy. They don't talk enough about how, if you have smarter policy, you can unleash America's spirit and actually get this country moving in the right direction again. So that's what I'm going to do every single day, is talk about how we have a vision. Donald Trump and I have a vision that if we govern more effectively, your life is going to get better. Housing is going to become more affordable. Groceries are going to become more affordable. Energy is going to become more affordable. We'll restore some peace to a world that is very much at war.
Wow, he wants to talk policy. Since when does Trump talk about detailed policy? Oh, that's right. The press only expects blueprints of Kamala's policies, which, by the way, she's actually done, especially on housing. Has Dear Leader and his boy wonder JB done the same? No. You just heard JV say that everything's going to be awesome with Dear Leader back in office while refusing to explain how they're going to make it awesome. Maybe Rick Albin from Wood TV could have asked another follow-up, like, how will cutting the corporate tax rate down to 15% help in those efforts, considering that lowering it down to 21% a few years ago didn't actually help millions of Americans either? Look, I've never met Rick Albin, and I'm sure he's a nice person, and I get that gaining access is the name of the game for some. And I've relied on Wood TV reporting several times because they do some good work there. I'm not trying to just hammer Rick. That's not the point of this whole thing. The point is, I just can't with these journalists who demand that politicians must talk to them since they will ask the hard, detailed questions. But how in the hell was that question a definition of a hard question? Guys, maybe they're not talking to you because you're not rising up to the challenge. Democracy is on the line. Oh, and on that same episode, Tim Skubick played former failed MAGA nutjob Tudor Dixon, who lost to Gretchen Whitmer by double digits 2 years ago. Give a response to former Governor Jim Blanchard's charges that Trump's mental acuity is declining. Now, it obviously is, to which she denied it, of course, but there was no policy discussion with Tudor Dixon. These guys complain about no policies, but they're the ones who refuse to ask about policies. Just 32% of Americans right now have trust in the media, and most of that is because corporate media owns most of media, hence why I started this awesome podcast. And legacy media is having a tough time dealing with the new kinds of reporting, good reporting that's happening online, and with those darn kids getting and sharing news on TikTok and the gram. And you can tell they have a huge disdain for social media. Please look in the mirror, legacy media, and perhaps some self-examination is warranted. Now, that being said, there are some good reporters and journalists in Lansing, which I have said many times here, which is why, and I know you're going to say, but Pat, you just spent the last few minutes blasting local media. That's true, but please hear me out. I do believe, and I do hope, that Kamala Harris and Tim Walz do interviews with local media across the country. Screw the national press, all right? You don't have to worry about the national corporate press. Go on popular podcasts. Visit online publications owned by marginalized Americans, but also do local press. I woke up the other day when Dear Leader visited Southeast Michigan, and all the local public radio's news was about that morning was Trump said this, Trump said that while he was in Michigan. It's free media. And I don't think you should pass up free media, okay? By talking to the local press, Kamala and Walz can continue to cause conniptions amongst the elite corporate press. So do better, media, especially on the local side. But Kamala and Tim should seek them out in the next 2 months as well. And talk about local issues in the states that you're visiting. It will turn out to be a huge boon for the campaign. See, I am a man of clarity who never, ever, ever contradicts himself.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of The Left of Lansing. I think I'll give you a reaction to Kamala and Tim's interview exclusively on YouTube this weekend. And of course, don't forget about the little additions I provide for you with my Friday shorts and Monday musings, which you can get wherever you listen to your podcast. Next week, I'd like to concentrate just a little bit on the Michigan State Supreme Court races this November. Again, local races, state races. Wide races, Supreme Court races are just as important, just as vital as what's happening with the presidential race. Okay, Michigan, Michigan State, and my Central Michigan Chips, minus Connor Stallions on the sidelines, begin to play some football this weekend. All right, in fact, CMU starts on Thursday night with MSU starting Friday and the defending national champion Wolverines on Saturday. So here are my quick win predictions for those three teams. I think CMU finishes with a respectable 6-6 record. MSU will have a tough start to the year, but they will get an unexpected win somewhere later on to finish 5-7 in the first year of head coach Jonathan Smith's tenure, and Michigan will finish with an 11-1 record. So you heard it here first or last, I don't know. Regardless, football season is back. Until next week, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston, and hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.